一般的撒就撒就撒就and for any new friends that's joining us, I see someone has already raised their hand. So you may raise your hand and ask your question directly. Or you may also send it anonymously via the chat. So I'd like to invite the first person, Chitra Devi, to please ask your question and unmute your microphone.
Thank you, Jennifer. Bhante, now this was very beautifully explained, so thank you. Now my question is, this sort of investigation that the trainee undergoes is usually once he gets into a good level of samadhi and beyond, and is that the stage when he goes investigating and breaking up everything and seeing things in a clear way? Is that correct, or can we do it in a normal day life as ordinary, doing ordinary things like cutting vegetables or looking at water or whatever? Can we break these things up into the way that you suggested, and can we get insights? Thank you.
Yeah, I think we, rather than waiting till we become real noble person, actually we can use all these techniques. There's no harm in using them. And actually, as a typical practitioner, so we are learning. We are understanding various techniques and we are trying to apply them. And I mean, it is not that immediately we become really accomplished in this practice. Rather, slowly, slowly, we are applying these various techniques. And as you said, suppose when you see something, so without grasping it as one unit, one single unit, if we can recognize it is a combination of various components, so that may reduce grasping. That may give a sort of better understanding about our experience. So therefore, application of these insights in day-to-day practice or day-to-day living is welcome. There is no harm in doing like that. But on the other hand, we have to balance it. Now say you are talking with someone. So internally, you may have an understanding about this person, maybe five aggregates and etc. But when you are talking to him, so we have to live in the conventional level. We cannot basically completely forget about the convention. We have to tell, I mean, we have to talk with him using his name and using various, say, conventional realities, conventional terms. And that is all right. But only thing is that we are not too much lost in it. We have some understanding about the temporary application of these terms. We are not really completely lost in these terms. But for the easy communication, for easy, say, living with others, so we may be using these conventions. And on the other hand, internally, inside, we may have some deeper understanding.
So one thing now, when we are meditating and we reach a certain level of samadhi, and then in the Satipatthana Sutta, the Buddha talks about the refrain, the Udayavaya and the Ajatabahidya. So can you explain a little bit at that level as well, please?
Sure. So that's why, say for example, one is practicing, suppose we'll take rising and falling. Now he is experiencing rising of the abdomen, falling of the abdomen. Initially he may thought, okay, this is my abdomen rising, my abdomen falling. But later, as his mindfulness refines, he loses all these labels. He now sort of don't put the term I or abdomen or tummy or whatever it is. And simply he has a direct experience. He removes all these unnecessary labels, all these mental constructs, all these man-made words, and he simply try to directly connect with the experience. Now he has certain series of movements in one direction and another series of movements in another direction. Series of rising, series of fallings, in another way. Now further he refines his understanding, further he refines his clear comprehension, sampajanya. As a result, he may understand, okay, this even a minute arising, even a minute rising has a beginning and very momentary existence, and then it immediately passes away. And if it comes to another minute arising, another minute rising or minute falling, it has the nature to arise and momentary existence and then immediately passes away. Actually, this momentary existence is also subject to change. It is not sort of existing permanent, rather from the beginning, from the very beginning to the end, it is constant change. Constant change is happening. That's why Buddha is telling, Uppado panyayati, vayo panyayati, titassa anyatattam panyayati. There's a arising, there's a passing away. In between, there's an incessant, continuous change is available. So this is how a yogi may experience if he properly refine his mind and he properly put his concentrated mind to this phenomena. So this phenomena show that behavior. Whatever the phenomena, it may be a physical phenomena, it may be a feeling, it may be a perception, it may be a thought, whatever it is, have this nature. And more he observe it within himself, the same thing he can inferentially understand outside. So actually at the beginning we do it ajjata, internal. So he may apply it to the whole bodily experiences, to various feelings, and to various thoughts, and various perceptions happening in the mind. Maybe the wholesome thoughts, unwholesome thoughts, hindrances. So he's applying, he's observing various phenomena, everything internal. But later, as his insights are maturing, he may understand that the same thing happens outside as well. Same body phenomena is available in someone else's body, same feelings are available in someone else, and same way of mental constructs are happening in someone else's mind. So inferentially he can understand, okay, this is the situation not only inside but also to the outside. So this is how this arising and passing away, samudaya vaya, come into the picture, and again ajjata bahidda come into the picture, and more this sort of understanding growing, so the grasping going to be reduced. Because when we give more emphasis or more value to internal things, then we grasp internal stuff. When we give more value, more emphasis to outside things, then we grasp outside things. But when we understand everything is subject to arising and passing away, everything is so transient, everything is nothing but four elements if we consider only the physical part, and if we consider the whole experience, it is nothing but nama rupa. So likewise, if we apply these insights to the whole picture, to the whole experience, then there is nothing to grasp. Nothing is worthy of grasping. Then the mind starts to let go. Then the mind starts to relinquish. And now the mind may experience more and more freedom. More and more freedom from concepts. More and more freedom from proliferation. So the mind is more clear, more still, more quietude is there. So his spiritual understanding may be growing daily, because daily he is training himself. So that's why it's very beautiful term, actually, the seka. The translation is trainee. So he's training himself, because the habitual tendencies may sort of invite him to grasp, may request or ask or propose him to grasp, but he's training himself. He's restraining himself. So this is a beautiful way of analyzing the whole picture, and it is very, interestingly showing in this sutta. Back to you.
So Bhante, from what I understand, and please correct me, in this sort of investigation is more clear when we are in that samadhi state. It's more, the clarity is sharper, and also it is easier to get insights. Would you agree with me, Bhante?
The samadhi, the term samadhi has different meanings. Say, when we consider the vipassana, so samadhi here is the enough concentration to see this phenomena as it is. It is not sort of any absorption, but the mind is not wavering. Now, suppose if you want to focus microscope. So you have to focus it properly, and then it has to be fairly steady, and then only you can properly observe it. So similarly, if you want to properly observe a feeling, so your mind has to stay on that feeling for a long time. It is not that the feeling is lasting for a long time, but you have to direct your mind very closer to that experience for a long time, then only you can really have a good picture about the feeling. So how many feelings are there, how they are behaving, and all these things are only available to you. Only you can keep your attention there for a considerable period of time. So these are the facilities, or these are the requirements that we need. So these requirements, we can say, is sort of presenting by samadhi. And when such facilities or such prerequisites are satisfied, then we can observe feelings properly, and how these feelings behave give us various insights. It is not that we are trying to pump insights to the mind or to borrow insights from outside, but rather this very quiet observation give us our own insights. I hope you understood it properly. Now, we have heard Buddha's teaching. We have heard that things are impermanent, but that is only a superficial knowledge. But here, what we are trying to do is we are keeping our mind fairly concentrated, fairly quiet, free from any conditioning. And we are carefully observing some phenomena, what is in front of us. Then how this phenomena behaving? So that really gives us the insight. So if it is behaving in a particular fashion, in a particular way, so then we understand, okay, this has the nature to arise. This has a nature to quickly pass away. So, and then you observe another phenomena. That too has the same nature. And you observe another phenomena. That too has the same nature. And then you can recognize this is a kind of a universal pattern. It's a kind of universal characteristic. Impermanence is a universal characteristic. This transience is a universal characteristic. And everything is subjected to this kind of a transient nature is a universal characteristic. And not having a core there, not having an essence there, not having any essence in anything, is a universal characteristic. So likewise, through this continuous observation, one may have various insights.
Yes, Bhante, I understood. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Thank you, Bhante. So the next question is, Bhante, please explain how disciple sees diversity and unity.
So this unity, diversity, those are actually fairly mind-made concepts. Fairly based on the self-view. So various other religions basically think there is a self, maybe a small self inside a being, and there may be a sort of a huge self, almighty self outside. So if we practice certain religious ritual, so this small self can become united with this outer self, outer big huge self. So one can be united with this outer self. So this is where the mind... So now suppose till the mind has various diversified views, various other perceptions, you can't come to this unity. But when you are sort of removing all these distractions, so the mind become unified, mind become one single thing. So they are, in those other religions, they say, okay, now you have become that. Now you have become that, united with that big self. So this is the kind of a view they have. So say for example, say there is something called Brahma, and say a human being has developed some sort of a spiritual practice, so one can become with that Brahma. One can become united with that Brahma. So there's a kind of a union. There's a kind of a unity. But on the other hand, in the Buddha's teaching, Buddha doesn't talk about such a creator God. Buddha doesn't talk about any sort of a self, even within ourself or even outside. Nothing is self. So, but that is also a gradual understanding. But if you, we can't apply such a very mature, advanced sort of a teaching to our very basic level of practice. Say suppose someone is still killing, stealing, involving various sexual misconduct, lying, and all these the typical, very mundane, worldly habits are there. So now he has to become a good person, first of all. At that time, we have to give him a sort of a self-view. We can't say there is no self, so you can continue all these bad things. Because if he simply applies this no self there, then he may argue, okay, if I am doing unwholesome things, why I have to be bothered? There is no self. But that is not the proper way of putting the teaching. Rather, first of all, one has to become a good person. So there we still operate the self-view. So basically in the morality level, the sila, we can say there is a self. So one become a good person, one become a sappurisa. So afterwards, this sappurisa is now trying to develop a concentration, a samadhi, a concentrated mind. Still he has the self-view. Because that may give him motivation. So he has the motivation that I have to be free from samsara, I have to become a sotapanna, I have to become an arahant. So likewise, the self-view is there. Later, when he starts to develop insights, only the self-view going to be penetrated. Only the non-self teaching may be utilized. So therefore, the Buddha's teaching has a sort of a gradual application. And we, on the other hand, we can say, there are various tools available, and these tools have to be properly used. And we should know where to be used. Yeah.
Thank you, Bunting. The next question, I assume that a certain amount of intelligence is needed to approach the practice in the way you suggested. The Buddha also mentioned the same, I believe. A total novice with little conventional education and wisdom may find it more difficult to tread the path. Am I correct?
I think we should not... knowledge is good, but we have to use it as a tool. We should not be entirely get caught up in the knowledge. Now say, for as human beings, as worldly beings, say people actually have to learn sort of various subjects. Say you go to a college, you go to a university, so you have various subjects to learn. So this is in a way useful for our day-to-day living, to deal with others, to earn something, to do a occupation. But the important thing is, when it comes to the Buddha's teaching, the mindfulness practice helps us to sort of disengage from this whole concepts. Keep the mind separate from all these concepts. Typically what happens is, we don't know that. Typically our mind is fairly trapped in those concepts. We can't think out of that. We can't think out of that boundary. So we have become a victim, a poor victim of all that what we have learned. So various things are available to learn. This subject, that subject, scientific subjects, art subject, commerce subjects, whatever it is. So as we learn, So our mind becomes fairly filled with so many perceptions, so many signs, and we get trapped there. But the mindfulness practice helps us to go out of this trap, to be free from this trap. And then one has the skill to maintain himself when it is necessary to be free from these concepts. And when it is useful, he is using these concepts. Suppose as a practitioner, so you come, you stay at home and you do your practice. At that time, you keep your mind entirely free. And now you go to the job. And there you have to deal with others. You have to take all the concepts. You have to consider the, say, stock market. You have to consider the, say, price. You have to consider various, commercial values, commercial terms, and you are utilizing them. But internally you know they are all merely concepts. They are all merely helping to deal with others, to properly do the job in a satisfactory manner. But that's it. That's the limit of it. There is no core, there is no essence, there is no reality in themselves. So this is how Buddha very beautifully mentioned in the, what is called the Deha Vitakka Sutta or Vitakka Santana Sutta. Both are dealing with the Vitakka, both are dealing with thinking. So where the practitioner has the ability to master thinking. When it is necessary, he can think. When it is not necessary, he can stop thinking. That's the beauty. So thinking, constructing, conceiving, using the language are certain skills we have and we are using it skillfully. But when we understand their limitations, but on the other hand, when we want to completely remove them and keep the mind with the proper way, with the proper view, correct view, you can simply understand all these views, all these constructs, all these concepts are merely concepts and they are very limited. They are man-made and you can keep your mind utterly free, completely free. And there you can stop thinking. So there's a pure awareness is possible, available, and the mind is fairly clean, clear, free from mental constructs. And so there you experience the, say, Buddha's teaching. There you experience the more, valuable insights of the Buddha's teaching.
Thank you, Bhante. And next, I'd like to invite Kumudini to please ask your question directly. Kumudini, you'll have to unmute your mic.
Okay. Thank you, Bhante, for your explanation regarding this. My question was regarding the same the question that the other lady asked, but what I understood was that these theoretical knowledge of these things is not insufficient. You have to get a experiential knowledge in when you meditate and so on. Isn't that correct, Amat Bhante?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. That's why. So that's why in this explanation, now in the previous one, Patavim Patavito Sanjanati, the term was Sanjanati. But here, in the training, in this second, what we have discussed today, the term is Abhijanati. So that is where the direct experience comes into the picture. So it is not a kind of a borrowed knowledge. It is his own direct experience. So that is where the practice is extremely important. So all this, actually what we have discussed is still in the superficial level. But you yourself have to put yourself into the practice and then only the term Abhijanati, the direct experience is direct experience is the most important.
In other words, just by studying these different steps as you have given it here is insufficient. You have to sort of meditate and analyze.
Definitely.
It's through meditation, I believe that you will be correct.
Yeah,
that was my question, Bhante.
Yeah.
So I must say that I enjoy your explanation very much. Thank you so much.
Yeah. So basically, so that is why, I mean, the in order to recognize chair as a chair, so that even a child can do. Even now in this level,
exactly.
Even in this level, so he recognized cha as a cha. So that is a typical sanjanati. So that is basically according to his conditioned mind. So basically he perceived there is a cha. So for him there is a cha, there is a permanent cha. That is a true cha. That is something is there. So his mind get colored immediately, his mind get occupied about various views about this cha. Now, there's a typical mundane kind of understanding. But on the other hand, when it comes to the trainee, so he also may see a chair, but there's a difference. So you can't immediately apply it to the outside. Better he do it internally first. So that is where we say, trying to simplify our whole experience and apply it internally first. Say when he is experiencing hardness, so he recognizes hardness. So when he is experiencing softness, he recognizes softness. When he is experiencing vibration, movement, all these various sort of phenomena, he is trying to recognize from his own direct experience, not from the book, from his direct experience. And more he experiences like that, now his whole physical being he can recognize as a manifestation of all these characteristics. Nothing but these four elements. Now, as his insights mature, then now he can inferentially put that understanding to the outside as well. So, all the beings, what we say, all the, even the, say, the inanimate things are made up with these four elements. Now, with that understanding, with such understanding, now suppose he is looking at a chair. Conventionally, he has the capacity to recognize this as a chair. But on the other hand, he has the capacity to look at this chair in many different ways. First way is to recognize this is not a single thing as a unit. Rather, it's an assembly of various components. When they come together and we assemble it in a different, in a proper style, proper form, we call it a chair. So the name chair is a concept that we have given. It's a name that we have given to something which is assembled. So the compactness view is broken. So this is one level of insight. So that is also fairly powerful insight. And on the other hand, if he has his own experiential knowledge about the elements, so that also can be applicable to this to the chair. So there also he can understand, okay, these are nothing but four elements. So the grasping is reduced, the proliferation is reduced, so he can simplify his whole experience without getting caught up in the experience. So further if he develop, so his mind starts to stay within, starts to avoid any grasping, and even though he may see a chair, that's it. There is no second thought. There is no mixing of the mind with the chair.
Yes.
So that's what the Buddha mentioned to Bahir, ditte ditta mattam bhavissati. So you have to restrain yourself. Just seeing is just seeing.
But then I have another question. Does this practice make you less emotional? Because I'm less emotional, and I have been told that I'm becoming cold. Is there something that can happen?
Actually, there are different ways we can explain it. One thing is, now say for example, before the practice, suppose you are immediately become emotional, you start to cry and you start to say be extremely get involved with others and all this. This may be the typical nature of us. But on the other hand, as we develop the practice, so we step back and look at the thing. So this kind of a nature may be arising in ourselves. So in the mindfulness practice, one important thing is that the sort of the observation. So rather than immediately jump to the picture and get involved, Now we have the capacity to step back and then to sort of properly investigate the thing. And if it is only required or only essential, we come to the picture. We put our hand. So then people may interpret that as now you have become cold. You have no emotions. Someone can sort of tell us. But, I mean, what happened to them is they don't have that break.
To be specific, I am taking care of my husband who is not well.
Uh-huh.
I take care of him very well, to the best of my knowledge and capability. But complains that I am not emotional with it. I find it difficult to be because I've been meditating a long time.
Yeah.
And I'm seeing all this and I don't know how to explain it to me. I don't think he will even understand.
Yeah, basically.
I
can understand your situation. So basically now say if you want to look after another person, certainly we may have some amount of patience, some amount of compassion. But on the other hand, if we become too emotional, we can't do it properly. Because we become too emotional, then we can't give the proper attention, we can't deal with the situation, we start to cry and we start to complain, and the whole thing we mess up. But on the other hand, when the clarity of mind is available, if he requires sort of tenderness, if he requires certain, say, good words, kind of compassionate words, that also can we do. But on the other hand, we have the sort of unshaken mind to not to get carried away with the emotions.
Right.
So I think that is necessary. Otherwise, I mean, you can't deal with yourself. And on the other hand, when the patient is, say, deteriorating, and we also, if we start to become really emotional, we also get depressed.
Right. So, thank you, Bhante. I was wondering whether I was doing things wrong or what was going on within me that I was becoming less emotional. Thank you very much for clarifying that.
Fine.
Tiruvan Sarnai.
Bhante, we still have two more questions. Shall we proceed?
Yes.
Okay. Dear Bhante, how do we understand viewing a movie in this regard?
Dealing a movie.
Viewing a movie.
Viewing a movie, right. So movie is a movie. So basically, again and again, if you keep that understanding, unfortunately, you can't enjoy the movie. Because if you want to enjoy a movie, you have to get utterly deluded. Then only you can shift to that movie world and you can enjoy it. You have to have entirely ignorant mind to really enjoy. But on the other hand, again and again, if you pump the insight, okay, this is a movie, then you are coming back to this world. You understand you are sitting in a theater. You are not in the 22nd century. Suppose there is a movie about 2030. There's a sort of aliens coming and they are attacking the earth. And then all these adventures are there. Now, if you lost yourself, you can completely be in the 2030. And you can really enjoy the movie. And you can really get shaken, you can really get upset, you can really cry, you can really get afraid because the aliens are coming in 2030. So you can enjoy it. But on the other hand, suppose in every 5 minutes, you are reminding yourself, this is a movie, then you can't live in 2030. Again and again, you are coming to 2020. So the enjoyment is less because you are coming back to the theater, you are coming back to the cinema, to your seat, you are sitting on a chair. You are sitting on a chair. And you are in this world. Now this is a movie. What you are looking at is not a reality. So therefore you have to select. Are you want to really enjoy a movie while being in delusion? Or you have to sort of recognize this as a kind of a construct, as a kind of creation of someone's mind, and it's a entirely a proliferation, kind of a creation. So this is a kind of a, so there you can say someone else can complain, or you are not enjoying the movie. You can, you have the choice.
Thank you, Prati.
Can you enjoy the movie, Jennifer?
Sometimes I can enjoy the movie. Sometimes I get involved as well, and then no longer enjoy the movie. I'd like to, for the last question, I'd like to invite Mahinda to please ask your question directly.
This dot point, he should not conceive himself apart from earth. Can you elaborate a little bit? It sounds like it still associates with the earth element.
No, actually, this is not merely the earth element. Wherever, when we are considering any of those earthbound matter, say chair, table, all these, there are so many components, we have earth predominant. And when it comes to water, there are so many things which has water elements predominant. Say you are seeing a cup of tea, you are seeing a glass of wine or whatever it is. And when it comes to air, when it comes to, say, heat. So all these are simply sort of, I have simply presented using one element here, simply taking the earth element. So everywhere, I mean, we are putting the language to communicate. We are putting the language to have a relationship with this outside world. So if we take this example, now when we see a chair, now we can have various relationships with the chair. So I want to have the chair. So we have the possessing relationship. So this is my chair. Still we have the possession. On the other hand, I hate this chair. This is not my chair. So I want to run away from this chair. So I am on the chair. So likewise, we have various, you know, the vibhakti. In Pali, it is called vibhakti. I don't know the English term there. So anyway, so we are having various relationship with this subject-object when we are experiencing something. So we are on it, we are away from it, we come out of it, and this is mine, so that's the possession, and we can call it, say if you are looking at a child, you can call him, son, come here. So there's an addressing. So likewise, there are many ways the language is constructed in order to have a sort of a relationship with this chair, with this whatever the object. So all these are included here, even though only few have taken as an examples, all these language constructs are considered here, and everywhere when the mind is trying to have such a sort of deluded view, then he is instructing himself, don't get deluded, this is a concept, don't allow the mind to proliferate, don't do any papancha, don't get into stories. Just stop at the seeing, just stop at the heard. So likewise, the trainee is trying to restrain himself.
Thank you, Panti.
Yeah.
Thank you, Panti. That is all for the questions for tonight.
Right, fine. So thank you very much for participation. Then we have spent almost 1.5 hours in discussing this sutta, and we were able to accumulate some merits. So we will share these merits with the traditional verses. Ittavataca amhehi sambatam punya sampadam sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya ittavataca amhehi sambatam punya sampadam sabbe bhuta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya එතාවතාචම්හෙහි සම්බතං පුඤ්ඤ සම්පදං සම්බේ සත්තා අනුමෝදන්තු සබ්බ සම්පත්ති සිද්ධියා ආකාසට්ඨා ච බුම්මට්ඨා දේවානාගා මහිද්దికා පුඤ්ඤන්තං අනුමෝදිත්වා චිරං රක්ඛන්තු සාසනං ආකාසට්ඨා ච බුම්මට්ඨා දේවානාගා මහිද්దికා පුඤ්ඤන්තං අනුමෝදිත්වා චිරං රක්ඛන්තු දේශනං ආකාසට්ඨා ච බුම්මට්ඨා දේවානාගා මහිද්దికා පුඤ්ඤන්තං අනුමෝදිත්වා චිරං රක්ඛන්තු මං පරං ඉදං වෝ ඥාතීනං හෝතු සුඛිතා හොන්තු ඥාතයෝ ඉදං වෝ ඥාතීනං හෝතු සුඛිතා හොන්තු ඥාතයෝ ඉදං වෝ ඥාතීනං හෝතු සුඛිතා හොන්තු ඥාතයෝ ඉමිනා පුඤ්ඤ කම්මේන මාමේ බාල සමාගමෝ සතං සමාගමෝ හෝතු යාව නිබ්බාන පත්තියා ඉමිනා පුඤ්ඤ කම්මේන මාමේ බාල සමාගමෝ සතං සමාගමෝ හෝතු යාව නිබ්බාන පත්තියා ඉමිනා පුඤ්ඤ කම්මේන මාමේ බාල සමාගමෝ සතං සමාගමෝ හෝතු යාව නිබ්බාන පත්තියා සාදු සාදු සාදු